Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Late Fitness Test. I'm your host Stel and I'm joined once again by Ben Dinery and Johnny Wilson. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show. How have your weeks been or week been? I'm getting my words all mixed up. I've been ill all week. I'm sorry. Ben?
All right, boys, how you doing? It doesn't actually feel like it's been just one game week into the season. It seems like it's been an absolutely long, hard slog already. But an eventful weekend. Really enjoyed the Premier League kicking back off again. Lots to talk about. So, looking forward to getting into it.
Yourself, Johnny?
A great week, really. I was obviously at Halifax Town for FC Halifax. Sorry, I'm not called Halifax Town anymore. I was there for pre-season, so I was there for about 9 weeks. And I finished my contract there on Monday, which was great. So it was nice to kind of finish on a winning note. So we were top of the National League, 3 games out of 3, 3 wins out of 3. Unfortunately, the lads lost on Tuesday. But I had a fantastic time there. A bit of a long journey up to Halifax, so kind of not missing the journey, but a great club, so I wish them the best for the season.
Great stuff. And have you got anything in the pipeline, or can't you say?
I do, but I'm not allowed to say. I'm on an NDA, as they say.
Ooh, excellent.
You're not trying to buy Newcastle United, are you?
Why, aye, man. How are you, man? How are you?
Okay, then.
I'm not even going to try the accent. I'm not even.
How are you in shape, man? How are you in shape?
Johnny's not trying it either.
Brilliant. Well, I know what you mean about being a long season already, Ben. I've been trying to catch up with the Champions League and Europa League qualifiers, and it's been such a head fuck, mate. Honestly. I was following the Champions League. See PSV Eindhoven going out to Basel, and then Basel going out to some Austrian team, and it's like, for crying out loud, like, all these big teams actually dropping out. Celtic losing to Cluj, like, who would have thunk it?
I know Wolves have absolutely smashed it and cruised through the night, and Rangers are likewise. But when it comes to football outside the Premier League. Mate, I just skate around the surfaces. I've got my head too involved in the Premier League to be looking elsewhere. You talk about a work-life balance with a family. There isn't one, really. No. So, I focus on the Premier League and then, maybe deeper into the rounds, particularly like the knockout stages and that. That's when I start to lift my head above the parapet somewhat.
Don't blame you. I don't blame you. Well, I mentioned Celtic because I wanted to use it as a segue to talk about our first subject, being Kieran Tierney. Now, apparently he broke Arsenal's vertical jump record and he's just come back from an injury. So it takes me back to the 1992 film, White Man Can't Jump, or White Men Can't Jump, sorry. What's all this about? Because I'm not trying to be funny, but Arsenal media, they're fantastic at really hyping up their players and making them larger than life figures, and this fella's only been at Arsenal for less than a week.
Just to give you a little bit of background for those that don't know, obviously Kieran Tierney come from the Scottish Premiership, struggled through the latter half of the season, most of this year, in fact, with an ongoing groin problem. Had hoped to finish the season, but got to a point where he just couldn't handle the pain, and he went in for a double hernia rock at the beginning of June, and essentially that's what he's been working his way back from ever since then. Prior to the deadline day, Neil Lennon was hopeful of getting Tierney back for Celtic in mid to late August, but since he's moved to Arsenal, they've released an update on his progress. Saying that he's actually targeting a return to full training with the squad by mid-October. So there's quite a lot of disparity there between the timeline. But, what's really sort of grabbed headlines in the last sort of the week or so was Kieran Tierney's vertical jump test results, which came in and he actually broke the club's record of 55 centimetres. It was actually his second jump. first came in just below Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang's record, and then his second jump actually surpassed that by a full centimetre. So, I mean, I have no idea if 55 centimetres is any good. You know, they're making a big thing of this. Arsenal supporters are absolutely loving it because they think they've got some kind of machine on their hands. But, you know, your take on this, Johnny?
Right. I'm not sure where to start on that one. Well, firstly, let's start with the jump and what it's a measure of. Well, the vertical jump is a measure of your explosive power. So it gives you an indication of how fast a player may be, how powerful a player may be. So when you're measuring power, so power tests, they can be very hazardous. And what I mean by that is that they carry a high injury risk. So usually the high risk tests that we do, we'll do them if there's a low consequence. So if there's a high risk and a high consequence, we won't carry the test out because it just wouldn't make any sense. So in normal circumstances, once a player is adequately warmed up and, you know, he's out training and playing, so he's doing that kind of jumping anyway, it's a very reasonable test to ask the player to complete. Now, the thing about this type of test is that you're asking the player to give a maximal voluntary contraction. So you're asking to give a maximal effort, the best he could possibly do. And sometimes the majority of players, the voluntary part catches them because they think, oh, well, you know, I'll just jump as much as I want to jump. Now, when you've got a player returning from injury, those maximal voluntary tests, sometimes, you know, maybe you want to err on the side of caution. I know with my own players, I would say to them, look, guys, when I'm talking about maximal running here or high-speed running here, I'm talking about 90, 95% of what your top speed, your match speed would be. Because my motto to the players is, you know, don't get injured in training, don't get injured in testing, okay? Because testing is for testing and training is for training. But, you know, it's the game that matters. Now, Kieran Tierney, if he's breaking the record, and let's put this into context, Cristiano Ronaldo would be known as one of the most explosive players in the world and of this generation and era. But he's absolutely smashed his record. Now, I'm not sure what Cristiano Ronaldo has actually jumped because there's a bit of discrepancy in how people measure. So some people measure the flight time, so how long they're in the air, and some people measure the height they actually jumped to. Both are indexes of power. But the normal Joe Soap on the street would jump between, you know, if they're reasonably fit, they'll jump between 40 and 50 centimetres. But Kieran Tierney, we talk about risk-taking behaviour, he looks like a guy who will put his body on the line for you all the time because he's obviously got no psychological concerns over his injury. If his operation was at the start of June, you know, he's 10 weeks down the line now at this stage. So, I mean, he must be pretty robust. He must be very close to the training squad if he's not already training with the squad. And you would imagine that it's going to be pretty close to where he's going to be back in for the first time in an Arsenal jersey. I know, and I kind of said this to you two guys earlier on, as a head of sports medicine myself, I might be having a chat with the player and telling him to wind his neck in a little bit in training or in testing and say, right, you know, love that, love your effort, love everything about that. But everything is great until something breaks, isn't it? So I remember a few years ago, we had a guy on the first day of pre-season and we were warming up. So we weren't even testing, right? And he was on a stationary bike first morning of pre-season. And he was a marquee player as well. So first team player, high status. And as he got off the stationary bike, he rolled his ankle. Just couldn't believe it. You know, so accidents happen and then you're all the time trying to mitigate against them, trying to, you know, prepare. Preparation trumps quality all the time, so you're always making sure that you're minimising that. So, and then is there any correlation for that test in soccer anyway? you know, and football anyway. And I guess Arsenal are great at kind of putting out this stuff. I'm not sure I'd be sharing that type of.
So would you be surprised then that the club are putting out, you know, maybe an expected return to play, say, by mid-October? That sort of really took me back. You know, on one hand, you've got his former boss, Neil Lennon, who was talking about 7 to 10 days at the beginning of August. He then suddenly joins Arsenal and, you know, we're 6-7 weeks away. I'm just wondering, you know, is it the club, again, erring on the side of caution? You know, if there are any niggles, any little setbacks, doesn't reflect against us in any way. But if he comes back ahead of schedule, you know, on the flip side, oh, actually, haven't we done a good job? You know, does that come into play? Or?
Under promise and overachieve. Might be one of those. It doesn't make sense. I don't mind going on the record here and saying it doesn't make sense to me that a guy can you know, smash your club record, right? Your club record, and in a power test. So if it was an upper body test of, you know, press ups, 100 press ups in a minute, or what your one rep max for maybe, I don't know, squatting or deadlifting or something, you'd say, all right, so he's strong, but maybe he hasn't worked on rate of force development, maybe he hasn't worked on speed. But he obviously has, because you're not going to get a guy to do a maximal jump if he's not sprinting or carrying out high explosive activities. So why would you keep him till mid October? He's a £25 million signing.
I mean, and this is quote word for word from the club's website today. Kieran Trippier continues to receive treatment and further assessments, aiming to participate in full training in October. So, which, you see, I was quite surprised and quite taken aback by that, because I was well under the impression that, you know, we could look at a potential return to play before the end of this month, you know, back end of August. And if they did want to err on the side of caution, we have a 2-week international break and we'll bring them back in mid-September.
I mean, look, the only people who would be able to answer... Do you know what? I'm sure Arsenal will take offence at this anyway. They'll take offence because I'm saying it anyway. That's for sure. you know, but everybody's entitled to opinion, and it doesn't mean that somebody else is wrong. It's just their opinion. But in my humble opinion, in my experience, if a guy is smashing club records and I'm telling him he's not going out playing until October, he's going to, you know, I'm going to get some eyes rolled. I'm going to get some, you know, questions asked. And I'm going to, you know, people are going to be saying to me, you know, are you too protective here? You know, and at the end of the day, these guys have got to come back early. They're all coming back early. It's about 3 points. It's, you know, he's not going to get this time back again. He, you know, even as young as he is and the opportunities that he's got out there, unless there's something else going on.
There's one thing to stress, I suppose, at this point is, you know, that it's not necessarily the words coming from the backroom staff, the medical team, that are coming out on the website or, you know, through Emery and the press team. Because this is something where I've experienced it in the past, particularly when Arsene Wenger was there, you know, where things were said and it wasn't necessarily a true reflection of what was happening, you know, on the training pitches and within rehab and stuff like that. So it could be that, you know, there is a little bit of miscommunication between, you know, the PR team who are putting out this information on the website and the medical team themselves. So, in the defence, that might be the case.
It would be, well, there's two things there, Ben. One is there's only, let's say if there is communication, there's only so long you can play that game where people won't be happy in your own club. So supporters, and including the player himself. And I'm fairly sure that the Arsenal medical team will, you know, if that's a miscommunication, they'd be very quick to kind of correct the media department there. So, I think they've got a good monitor on what goes out and what doesn't go out, in my experience in the past.
It's a story for another pod.
For another pod, yeah. Well, look, you know, there's no story there, but the fact of, this overachieving and under-promising, you know, I think there has to be a level of transparency between everyone. I mean, my words would all be, look, you know, if everything goes right, let's plan for this date. We could hit a few roadblocks along the way, but this is what we're expecting here. He can do this, he can do this, he can do this. It's always going to be task-based rather than time-based. So even putting that time on it, it just doesn't make sense to me. It's a case of, well, if he can jump explosively, if he can sprint maximally, if he can repeat those sprints, if he has the aerobic or fitness capacity to be able to last 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, if he's been in contact, if he's able to change direction, it might. The only other thing that might be going on there is that he is getting some symptoms on a particular movement. So it might be changing direction. It might be that as he goes to full pace and running, he's getting his symptoms back again. Therefore, they're reviewing what's going on there. In my experience in the groin, when players get their symptoms, so they have their onset of symptoms post-surgery. I'm going to get in trouble over this one now. Not by Arsenal, but by the whole medical world here. But in some cases, I'm not going to say in all the cases, when a player complains of his symptoms around the groin, and I'm only talking about this area, this anatomical area in particular, they get their symptoms 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks post-operation, and they go back to the surgeon. And the surgeon will go, do you know what? I'm unsure why this is happening. This doesn't really happen. You're just unlucky here. Well, you know, there is the opportunity here that they operated on the wrong structure. Because groin, like I said last week, is like Spaghetti Junction. Mm-hmm. It's like trying to get in and out of Birmingham. Never quite sure. You know, is that the offending structure? Is that the structure that's violating the system, that's causing the pain? Because groin surgery, in a lot of cases, is exploratory. And it's by exclusion. So what I mean by that is, this doesn't hurt, or this doesn't hurt, this doesn't hurt. Therefore, we think it must be this, and your scan shows that. And we already discussed that. You can't hang your hat on a scan. It's not gold standard. And usually the gold standard we have is an arthroscopy, where the surgeon will go in and operate and have a look around. It's gold standard for the knee and the ankle, almost. And I'm going to change that word gold standard and make it reference standard. So it's the reference we would use to have best practice. But in the groin, that doesn't quite hold true.
Yeah.
Wow. So there. And again, can you imagine that could cause all sorts of wildfire? However, it's, you know, it's happened in the past, so I'm not saying it's happening here. I'm just saying look, these are things that, you know, that it might also be.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. Fantastic. Well, gents, let's move on to another bit of a conundrum here. Leroy Sané, apparently he's still linked with a move to Bayern Munich despite possibly having an ACL. I think they reckon he's going to be out 6 or 7 months. Now, Ben, I'm a bit confused about this one, because I know Bayern Munich are used to selling duds, not buying them. And I'm not saying that Sané is a dud, but back in the day, an ACL would have ended the footballer's career. But obviously, as technology and medication and whatnot have progressed, we've seen the likes of Alan Shearer, Van Nistelrooy, all these other footballers bounce back from ACLs and probably being better players. Sane's potential move to Bayern Munich, though, do you think that's a goer?
Look, we're past the 9 o'clock watershed, so I'm going to call a bit of blue and call bullshit here. I personally cannot see, you know, we're talking about the vast sums of money that are being offered, you know, in excess of maybe 120, 130 million pounds. And again, Johnny will correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, Pep's already come out and said, you know, well, this type of injury, we're maybe looking around about February, March, 6 or 7 months. And that may be the case, but you need, you know, you need a lot of things to go right, things to go well. It's a long way back, and there certainly are no guarantees. You know, the papers today are still sort of linking Bayern with what they say, you know, is a discounted fee. But one, I really, you know, what is a discounted fee? You know, we're still not, you still got to be talking 100 million here. Because I don't think, you know, I think City would quite happily just, you know, let Sonny do his rehab and you know, stay at the club. And an expectation, you know, that he will return to play and reach his former levels. I just can't see how any club would risk, you know, those sorts of sums on a player when there's absolutely, you know, no guarantees that he's going to be able to return to them those levels pre-injury. None whatsoever. And I just find it, you know, even for insurance purposes and things like that, you know, which underwriter's going to look at that and go, oh, I tell you what, 150 million, I will bang that policy and fight me, brother. It just, that it doesn't add up to me. But, Johnny, I mean, you may tell me or disprove me wrong. And again, that's just my opinion. I see it. I've seen it in the past with Jay Rodriguez, who had an ACL injury, and he was linked to Tottenham for 25 million. And I ended up speaking to a guy in the paper, and I just went, you know, I went, you've got no, in my opinion, there's no chance whatsoever. I can't, you know, who's actually going to sign off on that check and go, you know, this is a calculated risk, it's worth taking. Not for 130 million pound, it's not.
Well, let's do a real life scenario, so, right? Because I face this situation so many times, and I've gone to you two guys, and Ben, you've gone. Nah, I'm not taking that risk. I'm not going to sign this guy. And let's say we're at Newcastle United, okay? And your job is on the line here, Ben. But you are on the coaching staff, okay? And this is Leroy Sané. Now, your assistant manager, Stel, would you sign this guy?
Would I? No.
Yeah. Why?
Oh, well, I don't know. He's got an ACL, and City probably want over 100 million pounds for him. I think it's a big risk.
Why?
You just never know if it's going to go again, I guess.
Well, I think if, go on.
I was just going to say, statistically, you know, the number of players who actually, you know, don't return to their former level is quite high. And if you talk about a player for, you know, 120 million plus, 130, and you've got financial fair play that, you know, that needs to be considered, you know, that's, are you really going to invest, you know, it's a big shout to be, you know, putting all your eggs in one basket for a player, you know, who there's no guarantees that he's actually going to come back and play this season. You know, I would prefer, you know what, great. He comes back in 6 or 7 months. He gets a little bit of a, you know, he sees out the back end of the season with City. He may, you know, he may get 10 or 15 games under his belt, gets a chance to play himself back in, and then go back in the summer and go, well, I tell you what, yeah, everything seems to be well. We'll do a test and we'll give you the money then. Hold back.
Yeah, but you know what, Ben? To be fair, right? And the thing is, like, I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate here. With Sané, he was left out of the World Cup squad last year, and no one really knows why. I'm not going to make any, you know, suggestions here, but end of the day, it's like, well, there's got to be a reason why he didn't make that German World Cup squad when he's one of their best players. You know, so I don't know. I don't know. Perhaps there's something else going on in the background that we're not privy to. So I don't know. This, you know, but he's an exceptional player. But I think for the money that City want for him, and if Bayern Munich are willing to spend over 100 million pounds on him, then my guess is they probably know a bit more than what we know.
Well, they could be spreading the risk as well. So that contract might be a 5-year contract. So they're spreading that 150 million or whatever it is over the 5 years, and they're risk betting. So they're going, right, okay, well, he's had his ACL. He'll go through a good rehab, whether he does it at Bayern or he does it at Man City. But, you know, statistically, he's probably not going to have another one, which he's more likely to have another one than somebody who hasn't had an ACL. But statistically, he's more likely not to have one, probably not going to have one. And that's where your risk assessment comes in. So it's a case of they may have their risk, and their risk policy might be a case of, well, look, we're going to sign two players who have got a lot of risk factors for them. We're going to sign 50% of our players who are moderate risk, and then we're going to have some backups which will be low risk. So it kind of has to fit in within the club policy and procedures and with regards to where does this guy sit. And then, you know, it costs you money to buy goals. It costs you money to buy speed. It's very, you know, to get the product you want out on the pitch, you've got to spend that type of money, and it might be a longer-term investment there. Now, I'm not saying that that's the case, by the way. I'm just saying that there might be in contracts, there's a play for performance. If the same ACL goes, then there's the parent club would usually take on the cost of it and so on and so forth. So there are clauses in these as well. Now, I don't know if he's going to go anywhere. I don't know if he's going to stay there. The likelihood is that if this is on the media, then the player is probably a big driver in this as well. Mm-hmm. He wants to go.
Would the concern not be, given the type of player that he is, you know, quick, fast, explosive movements, turns of pace, change of direction, and all of this, is a concern that, you know, like, the injury is going to affect that, and ultimately, you know, he's not going to be able to do the things that he maybe could pre-injury. You know, statistically, what does that say in terms of performance levels, Johnny?
Yeah, the statistics there are very poor. So, poorer than the headlines would suggest. So there is a very low percentage of players that get back to their pre-injury levels. So their pre-speed, pre-power before they tore their ACL. Their movement mechanics are now asking, you know, let's say you get your hamstring pulled through. So they use your hamstring to act like the ACL, which is a ligament. So you're asking a tendon to do a ligament's job. And there's a process of ligamentization, and that means that the tendon has got to lose its bounciness, its elastic band-like property, and become tight and stiff like a ligament. And that might never happen in some cases. Or it might take anything up to three years for the process of ligamentization, just from surgery alone, to do an adequate job. So a lot of the times I say to the players, all the time, I say to the players, if you're going to have this type of surgery, don't rely on surgery. Become a better mover. And that's where the key is, really, like their control and then changing their behaviours with regards to risk, which is what we spoke about, like Kieran Tierney earlier on. So, Leroy Sané, you're going back into training. Do you know what, Leroy? Do yourself a favour and modify your behaviour when you return to training. You know, go at 80%, go at 85%, go at 90%. The further you are away from the incident, as in time-wise, so you're less likely to have a recurrence at 13 months than you are at 14 months, than you are at 15 months, than you are at 16 months. So the longer you go into your journey, the less your risk becomes exponentially. Yeah. But, you know, following injury, very difficult to become more powerful and faster, you know, following an injury when you're at the top, when you're very close to your genetic ceiling anyway. You know, when you're close to your genetic threshold, when you're playing professional sport, when you're an elite sports person, you're at the top of your physiological envelope anyway. Now, if you were Joe Soap on the side of the road and you had no training history, and you weren't in the best physical possibility and position you could be in, and you had an injury, yeah, you could come back faster, you could come back stronger, you could come back more powerful because you didn't do that training in the first place. Maybe you went on a skiing holiday and you got your skis caught and you ended up doing your ACL. You've got every chance of coming back and, you know, not having that ACL happen again. But these guys, you know, are eyeballs out. They're eyeballs out 90 minutes for 60 times during, you know, almost a 12-month period. It's crazy. But you know, look, everybody has to do that. And Leroy Sané is not the only person to ever have an ACL. He's not going to be the last person to have an ACL injury. And then how can you discriminate against one injury and not another injury? And if you're going to sign him, sign him. So why would you not sign? Like, so for example, there have been other people who have had ACL injuries in the past, but they still get signed. So it's a matter of timing, really. Like, if you want the guy, you want the guy, whether he's injured or not injured. If it's an ACL, it's an ACL. If he's going to have another one, he's going to have another one. So it's a case of, well, look, there are plenty of guys out there who have ACL injuries and don't even have surgery, and they just crack on with it and they change their behaviour. But it's a hard line not to sign someone over an ACL injury.
Yeah, because going back to what I said before about Van Nistelrooy, I remember when United had that interest in him, the original interest when he was at PSV Eindhoven, and I know a medical was done and he actually failed it because they found a knee problem, and then United basically wanted him to go through keyhole surgery to make sure that, I think it was the medial ligament, he wouldn't have any like lasting damage. He refused to have it because he was worried about not making the Euro 2000 squad, and then 4 days later his ACL goes in training, and then obviously a year later he then joined United. So I don't know whether Bayern Munich are basically waiting for Sané to recover from that ACL and then possibly, I don't know, do their own tests on him before making that offer or whatever. I'm not sure how it works, to be fair.
It's an interesting discussion, isn't it? And yeah, the discussion that the three of us are having right now is exactly the discussion that those people who are involved, who are decision makers at Bayern, are talking about. There will be people around that table who will be adamant that they shouldn't sign Sané because of his injury. There'll be people who are going to say, well, find us another like for like that we can get right now or in 12 months' time. Find us somebody who's going to fit into our philosophy and our game plan, who wants to be here in the next 5 years, for the next 5 years. Yeah. You know, that's tough as well. Like, and then, you know, people are kind of going, well, what about this guy? What about that guy? Not good enough, not available, won't come here, haven't got the right deal. Our only option is this guy, dependent on what our KPIs are. So if their KPI is to win the Champions League or to win the Bundesliga, and then he's part of that over the next 3 years, then, you know, there's a kind of a bigger umbrella picture to face as well. And the fans, he might be a fan's favourite. And I've seen players sign because they're fans' favourites as well. You know, they're the ones we give updates on when they're injured. Nobody else gets updated on their injury apart from the one that the fans really want to hear about. Mm-hmm. You know, because the media department want to, you know, make a bit of a fuss on this guy because he's the one the fans want to hear about.
Yeah. That's right. Okay, let's move on to Liverpool because, you know, Sané's got an injury and he's a key player for City, but Alisson pulled up with an injury on Friday, first game of the season, and we spoke about the FIFA Pro report last week about how players are playing too many games and whatnot, and it's another bizarre one. Alisson actually injured his the foot that kicked the ball, not the standing foot. We don't know how long he's going to be out for, Ben. Have you heard anything since?
I haven't, and that's been the issue, I think, with a lot of Liverpool supporters. They seem to think that the club are trying to hoodwink them in some way and actually, you know, playing down the injury. So again, to give a little bit of background, it looked a fairly routine clearance for Alisson. struck the ball and fell to the turf. Now, post-match, Jurgen Klopp came out and said he felt as if he had been hit on the back of the leg. Now, we refused the stretcher, and he sort of was helped off around the pitch by a member of the medical team. You know, the social media went absolutely ballistic about this. You know, everyone and their granny all of a sudden, you know, were medical professionals and surgeons. And, you know, they had him booked in for an Achilles tendon rupture. And, you know, that was his season over. Jurgen Klopp actually, you know, came out and said it's definitely his cough. And we're looking at a few weeks in the first instance. But he didn't, you know, he wasn't given any specifics. The idea was, you know, we'll give another update in maybe 10 to 14 days' time. Now, as we know, Liverpool played in the Super Cup on Wednesday evening against Chelsea. And Alisson actually posted a social media update of him watching the game on his laptop, and he had his foot in a protective boot. Now, typically the boot is used for maybe ankle and foot injuries. And again, that people were sort of suggesting, well, you know, that's not his calf. Why is it there? It must be his Achilles. Why are the club hiding this from us? And it linked in, you know, quite well with the FIFPro report that came out on the 1st of August, because Alisson was one of those players that they actually singled out. He had travelled over 80,000 miles in the last year, and he had been involved in, I think it was 72 games during that period of time. So we had actually posted an article on that on the website, and the article itself was the most retweeted and most read article we've ever produced. And it was dividing opinion across, you know, basically across everybody, particularly Liverpool supporters, who had, you know, quite a few unpleasant things to maybe say about Jurgen Klopp and the medical team, and others who just come back and said, well, listen, you don't know what you're talking about because he's a goalkeeper, and goalkeepers aren't really, you know, susceptible to those, you know, fatigue-related injuries and so on and so forth. And, you know, as we do so, it did divide opinion, but it provided some really good debate. And yeah, so that the timing of that injury couldn't have been any worse for Liverpool or any better for us in terms of getting that content out and the FIFPro report. So I'm just wondering, again, Johnny, what's your take on it? I mean, like you say, I know goalkeepers aren't covering the same types of distance as outfield players are. But, you know, as we discussed prior, you know, in previous podcasts, you know, everything that goalkeepers tend to do, it's all fast and quick and it's explosive movements. You know, and there are certainly a lot of demands and intensity to their game. I mean, I don't know if you saw the incident and if you thought it was, you know, because I've had some, you know, some physios at other clubs who messaged me straight away and they said Achilles rupture gone, season over. You know, that was the general opinion, you know, across the board there. So for Klopp to come out and say, you know, it's a few weeks, they're speculating that maybe possibly a grade 2 calf tear in somewhere between maybe six to 8 weeks could be realistic. But, you know, the club are remaining quite sort of tight-lipped on that.
Firstly, the best part of that is a physio from another football club texting you and saying definitely his Achilles from a camera angle, which is I didn't see it now. I can imagine it can only be called suspect. And can you imagine the same physio? I don't know who you're talking about, by the way. The same physio then, that player presents him, oh, well, we'll need a full assessment and we'll need a, you know, we'll have to get a scan on that and we're not quite sure yet and it could be this. And then they send you a message, definitely the Achilles. Well, if ever I have, you know, anyway, that's me just going on a little bit of a rant there. Very unprofessional of the other physios, not me. So I seen the picture that I can't comment on the mechanism of injury because it was, I did see it on Twitter a little bit, but it's very hard to see when the injury actually happened. But I seen the picture that people were raving about regards to he was watching the match with his foot up. I thought it was, and it was you who sent me the picture, Ben, and I thought it was you. And I went, I was like, what happened to you, lad? You know, that kind of way. Because I went, wow, what happened to you? And Ben replied back, it's Alison, you know. And I went, oh. That actually happened, by the way. That actually happened. Okay, so my opinion has been completely watered down now. We'll hear what I'm about to say. But the walking boot would be no surprise to me. So all players who have a lower limb injury, so a lower limb injury, now what I mean is the lower leg, I mean the shank of the leg, so from knee down, I'll put them in a walking boot, which is the boot that Alison has got, because I'd rather be safe than sorry. What I don't want to do is send the player away after a game on a Friday or a Saturday. They come in the next morning, we're unsure, we get a scan, we're waiting for a little bit of time for the scan results to come, and next thing the scan says, it's a little bit more significant than we thought. Therefore, the player should be in a walking boot. And then for the player to turn around to you and think, should I have been in a walking boot before now? So I would always put a player in a walking boot and on crutches to be non-weight-bearing stroke partial weight-bearing, because when they're in the boot, they can be partial weight-bearing. So that's the other thing that should be known there. If he's in a boot, he'll be partial weight-bearing, more than likely. And that way, then, it gives you a bit of time. It protects the area, you know, it immobilizes the area. And again, you'd immobilize a joint, you would immobilize a tendon, you would immobilize a muscle in the early stages. So we have this protocol called a PRICE or a POLICE protocol. So PRICE being protect, rest, ice, compress and elevate. POLICE being protect and optimize the environment. So that's the difference between those two. So it would surprise me more if he wasn't in a walking boot. Boot itself is not indicative of any specific injury to the lower leg. So you could, what I mean by there is that you would put a player in a walking boot for any injury in the lower limb until you've until you know exactly what's going on. So if it was an Achilles tendon rupture, they would have acted on it before now, though. You know, he would have had surgery by now. I'm pretty sure of that, you know, or he would have gone out and seen a specialist. They would have talked about, you know, a conservative approach versus surgical management, because of the high profileness of this guy. In 11 weeks' time, I don't think you want to be the medical department that went for a conservative approach. And can you imagine if that failed? So he re-injured, and then the player turning around to you going, do you think I should have had surgery? I should have had surgery at the start. But I didn't have surgery because, you know, we decided to go with physiotherapy. We decided to go with manual therapy. We decided to go with loading. We decided to go with it. That's what I mean by a conservative approach, so a non-surgical approach.
Do you think it's a calf tear, though?
I don't know, because I didn't really see the incident. And now, because I think Ben just said there that it was the standing, it was his planted foot, wasn't it?
No.
Rather than his kicking foot. Or was it his kicking foot?
No, it was his kicking foot, yeah.
Well, if it was his kicking foot, I mean, his leg is going to be...
extended his knee, I think.
If he's hyperextended his knee, then there's a possibility that you would tear the calf muscle, so your gastrocs, because your gastrocs, they travel between two joints, so they travel up past the back of the knee and down to the ankle. So a hyperextension of the knee is a mechanism of injury for the calf muscles, for gastrocs, your soleus, and also your Achilles tendon. So they all form what's known as a tricep surae. That's the overall umbrella term. And if you did do that, then you would put a person in a walking boot. If you were going for a conservative approach, okay, then you would get them in a walking boot as quick as you possibly can, so the boot is on, and you would load the player as quick as you possibly could. So non-weight-bearing status, so having them non-weight-bearing on that limb, so on two crutches, doesn't bode very well in the short term, medium term, or and trying to get a transition a player back into running and back into training and back into playing. So you would load this injury very early if it was a muscle injury, if it was a tendon injury, if it was an injury that was not significant enough to go for surgery.
And what would you say to, well, first and foremost, the demands that have been applied over the last 12 months in terms of his game time and the amount of travel, but also, you know, Alisson's only recently returned to pre-season training. He did. He was part of the club's training camp in Evian in France. He went there on the Monday. He played a 60-minute run out an hour on the Wednesday night, so just after a couple of days' worth of training. On the following Sunday, he played 90 minutes in the Community Shield, plus the penalty shootout. And then, you know, 5 days after that, he sustained an injury just before half-time. So he hasn't got a lot of, like you say, training in his legs from pre-season, culminating of everything that's went on over the last 12 months. You know, is that a factor?
For sure. So there's a couple of things there, right? Okay. So I think one of the things that you're getting at here is that there's what's called a monotony training load, and this is written in research, and basically training monotony, right, is a term where you're doing the same type of training over and over and over and over again, and that type of training has the ability to increase your training risk or your injury risk. So if you keep on doing this and without a break in it and no change in the type of activity that you're doing, then your injury risk increases. Your training monotony and your fatigue index, so how high you are on the fatigue index, they're closely correlated as well. And again, there are a few people like Tim Gabbett and so on and so forth, they talk about this chronic and acute load, so that if your chronic load is very low, so you know your training over a period of a few weeks is low, and then you spike your load over a session or a couple of sessions, then you're at high risk as well. So the fact that the guy hasn't had a break, he's been doing the same type of training and playing for however long, his training monotony would be very high, his fatigue index would be very high, and more plausible than that, and more common sense than that, if you're a road cyclist, the more you're out in the road, the more chance you have of getting knocked down. So you've got less chance of getting knocked down if you only go and cycle once a year. But if you're cycling 365 days of the year, you've got more of a chance of getting knocked down or getting injured than the person who cycles once a year. So the fact that the guy has done so well for so long, I think if anyone deserves to have a break and get an injury, I guess this guy does.
Yeah, he actually played every minute of every Premier League game last season. Arrived at the club, and plus Simon Mignolet sat on the bench for the whole Premier League season. Adrian arrives at the club. He's only been there 4 days and gets his first taste of Premier League football. More minutes than Mignolet did in the whole of 2018-19.
I'd give the guy a high five. And just for any of the you know, let's say that the loading police who are out there, I do know it's about training fluctuations for training monotony, just in case there are any sports scientists out there. But I don't want to go into that granular type of conversation, because this is for, you know, ultimately the audience here is Fantasy Football League. So I don't really want to go into boring people to death.
Excellent. Well, let's quickly turn our attention to another footballer that's been cruelly named Jack Wilshere, also known Jack Wilshere. apparently he's actually seeing his own physio a couple times a week. Now, is this normal?
I'll give you a little bit of the backstory, because this is something I stumbled across just today. And it was basically Jack Wilshere became quite friendly with a physio from his Arsenal days called Declan Lynch, who you may or may not know, Johnny. Yeah. But I think he's from your neck of the woods. And basically Jack Wilshere brings him across a couple of times a week to do some work on him. And it was actually brought up in Thursday's press conference with Manuel Pellegrini. And he said, look, he does it with our blessing, got absolutely no problems whatsoever. He gets his work done. He takes it away from the training ground. He takes it away from his club. And it's a decision that's his make. But, you know, it would be my thing. And you know, if I was at West Ham and I was part of that medical team, you know, would my nose be a little bit put out of joint? How common is this? What, and you know, why is he seeing this guy first and foremost? Is it a friend? Does he not trust us? I don't know. It just doesn't sit very well with me, and I think it potentially could open a can of worms. But you know, this might be common practice.
It's becoming more common practice, for sure. I guess, look, there's always two sides to the coin, right? Okay, so I'm going to put both sides to you here as a head of sports medicine. Number one, let's say in my position as a head of sports medicine, now the culpability is shared. So if he does get injured, I wasn't in charge of his care. I wasn't in charge of his package of care. I wasn't responsible for managing his load or for his injury risk, or trying to reduce his injury risk, or for advising how best to move forward with this player to maximise his opportunities on the pitch. Because that's now been decided by the club and the player, the best way to move forward is to have an external person in. On the other side of the coin, Declan Lynch is highly, highly experienced. Therefore, as a head of sports medicine, I would love to bring in a guy like him, because I feel like there are so many learning opportunities there, and that if you work together, and Declan is a good guy, so Declan's not going to be, you know, adverse in his approach. He's not going to be tricky. He's not going to be going behind doors and doing this with a player, not doing that with a player. Declan knows exactly the demands that are on Jack with regards to training and playing. He's very experienced with dealing with professional athletes. He's also had a successful relationship with Jack Wilshere in the past. Now, apparently Jack Wilshere is paying for the physio himself. I don't, in this particular situation, I don't see a negative connotation here. Mm-hmm. Because you're not getting in somebody who's a perceived specialist in alchemy, right? And said that they can get a player back in here, and they've got no history of working in professional sport. They've got no history of working in professional football. They haven't got a clue what it means to manage training load. They don't understand that it's about 10 months of the year rather than just this particular game. You know, this guy, Dick Lynch, has a huge understanding of the individual needs of the player, and then the demands of the sport at the level that is required. So for me, he'd be a welcome addition to the team. And you know, if messages need to go through to Jack with regards to something or other, I don't know the player. I mean, he could be, he might be a very nice guy. He might be a guy that's very difficult to talk to or communicate with, you know, but if you've got somebody who can kind of bridge that, then brilliant. And the head physio at West Ham is very experienced as well. So Richard Collins, he's hugely experienced. West Ham, Cardiff with Malcolm Mackay, Swansea, now at West Ham. So he's got a huge amount of experience. and all in professional football. So he's very well respected as well. So I'm sure those two guys get on very well. Because I know Rich is not just a physio. He understands load. He understands what it means to, you know, recondition players and condition players to give them the best chance of playing as many games and training as much as they can with the squad. And there are other situations where players will go to, a different type of profession. If I mention any profession here now, there's bound to be chiropractors and osteopaths are in the audience now and they're going, if he fucking says a chiropractor or osteopath here, I'm going to write in and complain. But some of them will go to the bone crackers, you know, the bone men. You know, they'll crack your bones and and they say, my back feels out of place. Your back feels out of place. Where did you leave it? On the fucking tube? I don't think the back is out of place now, really, is it? Yeah, but I was at the chiro and then he cracked me back into place. And you're looking at the guy and you're going, he cracked you back into place. Get out of my treatment room now. Do you know what? I'm being especially devilish tonight, you know what I mean?
Make sure any problems, any, you know, questions, any complaints, send them at Uncle Stell.
Don't get me involved in this.
At Uncle Stell, that's what I meant.
Don't get me involved in this, I'm just a middleman.
He's the magic man.
I have enough hassle on my timeline without adding to it.
Well, sorry, I've only got 400 odd followers. I'm all right in that respect. You've got over 100,000, so...
Man, honestly, I tell you what, it's an absolute shitstorm every other day. Really, man, honestly, I'm the blocking king. I just don't engage anymore. I just block.
The creator of your own demise.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. There you go. Well, I'll tell you what, bit of team news here, which might upset a few West Ham fans. There's two players who I believe West Ham are pinning a lot of their hopes on. Felipe Anderson, who had a fantastic season last season, and Sebastian Haller, who came in the summer. Apparently, both of them faced late fitness tests because they picked up knocks against City.
They do indeed. I think the good thing to come out of today's press conference was that Pellegrini confirmed that both injuries were actually impact. So it was kick. So, they've got a chance. A decision on their involvement won't actually be made until the final session. So that session will happen on Friday. And, they'll sit down and, at this stage, I would suggest that, both players have a very good chance of making the game.
Excellent, excellent. And what about Everton? Because I know, obviously, Schneiderlin is suspended. Leighton Baines isn't going to be there. But Fabian Delph, he hasn't made his debut yet. And Andre Gomes is being assessed.
Yeah, so Morgan Schneiderlin was in the holding role last weekend, picked up a couple of bookings, which possibly opens the way for maybe new signing Gaberman to come in, but he's not quite up to speed yet. But also Fabian Delph was pictured back on the training pitches, took part in a full session, and looked like he was involved in a seven-a-side game and looked to be moving quite, comfortably without any obvious discomfort there. He's been managing a groin problem. So, all being well, as long as there aren't any reactions or setbacks, I would expect Fabian Delph to come through that. But one player we haven't seen on the training pitches was Andre Gomes. He rolled his ankle just before half-time at Selhurst Park. And Mark Wilson have actually come out and he said, he felt that really, turned the game. Everton were in control against Palace for much of that first half. And then following his enforced sort of withdrawal, the game sort of swung and were a little bit sloppy in possession. So he'll be a big miss if he doesn't recover from an ankle problem in time for the weekend.
Mm. And just one more from like a selfish perspective. Lloyd Kelly, who made a big move from Bristol City to Bournemouth in the summer. I know he was at the Bristol City for about 8 years, and my good friend Trevor Chalice, who's actually at the club, was waxing lyrical about this kid last season. There's no real news about when he'll be back, is there?
Yeah, in fact, there was no real news on the injury as such. Unfortunately, his injury was overshadowed by David Brooks, who, you know, they suffered an injury in and around the same time in training. And it was sort of tagged on to the end of a David Brooks headline, who was out for 3 months. Oh, and by the way, Lloyd Kelly has got an ankle problem as well. But ahead of the, you know, game week one, Bournemouth's first game of the season, Eddie Howe did, you know, was able to shed a little bit of light on what happened in it. It was a training ground tackle. He said he was quite unfortunate, but, you know, it doesn't appear to be too serious. We're certainly looking at weeks as opposed to months, you know, and given the close proximity of the international break, you know, it could be sort of mid-September, maybe game week five when we're seeing Lloyd Kelly back in contention for Bournemouth.
Fantastic. Oh, one more thing before I forget, can't not talk about Newcastle. Andy Carroll, when can we expect him to wear that Newcastle shirt again?
Yeah, well, you know what it is. I like Andy Carroll. I've been a big fan of his, and you know, when he's on the pitch, I think he can definitely bring something different to the side. Now, as we all know, he's had quite a well documented problems with his ankle. He had a couple of surgical procedures this year. Actually still in contact with his surgeon. He's been doing a lot of work away with a personal trainer, and he's going to be governed by the surgeon's timelines. He's come out and he said, look, you know, I'm not putting my body on the line. I'm not going to cut any corners. I'm not taking any chances. I'll do exactly what the surgeon tells me, you know, and when I'm ready to move on to that next phase of recovery and step that up, then it'll be the case. So, you know, again, there's no timeline on that, but it doesn't sound from what he said to this date that, you know, that a return to play is imminent.
So we won't be seeing any vertical jump records being broken there.
No, not this week anyway.
Yeah, I'd sign Leroy Sané first, you see, in this situation. And all that. You're talking smack, Ben. You're talking smack.
But you know what? We've got Andy Carroll on a probably a very low basic, and on a more or less, you know, a big pay-as-you-play bonus, and we picked him up on a free transfer. A local lad who is desperate to pay for the club, versus somebody who is sidelined for at least 6 months, who's going to cost you at least 120 million, and there are definitely, you know, some suspect off-the-field activities going on there. So, give me Andy Carroll.
Well, Andy Carroll is some suspect off-the-field.
I think he's worth taking the chance for.
Did you say pay per play, is it?
It's a big, yeah. He's a...
You'll save a fortune.
He's took a massive, massive pay cut
pay cut. What's he down to?
But look, all I have to say is Mike Ashley, right? That guy wouldn't spend Christmas, right? So if Mike Ashley's prepared to put his hand in his pocket to bring somebody in, look, you talk about Joe Dill, and for all his faults, and as much as I absolutely despise the cretin, the blood-sucking cretin, right? When it comes to business, you know, that doesn't make many mistakes.
So, do you know what, right? Would you be able to, at some stage, fish out Andy Carroll's playing availability over the last six seasons?
Well,
you'll hardly need a spreadsheet for it anyway.
Well, I had a Twitter spat. And we were talking about Danny Welbeck, and at the time he was actually a free agent, and the talk was, you know, why does nobody want him? So this was prior to his move to Watford, and would West Ham be interested now that obviously Daniel Sturridge, Andy Carroll's left? And they were saying, you know, his availability, Danny Welbeck, is a lot better than Andy Carroll's. And I just thought to myself, well, shit, Danny Welbeck's isn't that great. And I had a quick look, and it was, I mean, it's fair to say he's had a few problems over the last couple of years. Let's just see it.
And you signed him injured?
Well, he had his second bit of surgery, I think, in late April, sort of May, which ruled him out of the, you know, the back end of 2018-19. So it's a case of, I know he was working, he got his own personal trainer, and he was working throughout the summer because he had to try and secure himself another club. And so I think he's in reasonable condition, but he's certainly not ready for the rigours of Premier League football at this moment.
There you go. There you go.
There you go. There you go. There you go. You've heard it here.
And can I just add there, I've actually got Sky Sports News on in the background, and I've just seen Andre Gomez sprinting. So that might be a little bit of insight into where Andre Gomez could actually recover and be available to face Watford this weekend.
There you go. Superb. Good stuff. Good spot. See,
love it.
Some of us have got the TV off when we're doing a podcast, you know.
To be honest, I was falling asleep when Johnny was talking.
I knew that was coming.
don't make me laugh. I'll get coughing fits.
I've had a pedicure. I've had a lot.
Oh, blimey. Excellent. Top stuff. Well, gentlemen, is there anything else you guys would like to discuss before we wrap it up?
I think I'm all done. I'm all, again, another very enjoyable podcast. It's been great, lads.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed it. I felt like I've been really entertaining today.
Brilliant.
Well, look, we'll put that out to the public will tell us. Make no bones about it.
Absolutely. Well, next week I'll be recording from Dublin. So if anyone wants to meet me and join in like a live audience, that'll be fun, wouldn't it?
That'd be awesome.
There you go. You're not going to be that part of the world, are you, Johnny?
I'm from Cork, so it's down the bottom of the country. Oh. So yeah, I'm not a fan of Dublin either now, to be honest. Wouldn't be my cup of tea.
Is the Wi-Fi good though?
I'm out there to alienate everybody on this podcast tonight. Is
the Wi-Fi good at least down side there? I don't even know, down there, up there, where is it? I'm in London, so it's up there, isn't it?
It's over the pond. You would say over the pond for you.
Ah.
You know, because you're kind of directly across from that. Yeah. Is the Wi-Fi good? The Wi-Fi's good over there, yeah?
Yeah. She's out there with work. So I'm taking.
Oh no! I mean the Wi-Fi.
Oh,
lost the communication.
Sorry, see, I'm so ill.
Ill. How's your wife?
Yeah, she's all right. She, like I said, she's going to be out there with work. So I thought, well, I've got a few days off work. I'll take the little one out there as well and make use of the free hotel room, which her company's paying for. Which I really shouldn't be saying, but I don't think anyone from her company's listening. So, oh well. Yeah.
You heard it here, folks.
No, but you could tell that this illness of mine has finally, you know, got one over on me. Crikey. I'm not even going to edit this. I'm actually not going to edit this. I can't. This is too funny for me to edit. I don't know. Yeah. So I'm hoping the Wi-Fi will be good, not the Wi-Fi or whatever it's called.
Not the Wi-Fi.
There you go. Although apparently there's a was it Tato Adventureland or something like that where the kid wants to go.
Oh, definitely go there, right? Yeah. I brought my young lad there, right? And he calls it Potato Park. Potato Park, but he calls it Potato Park. Oh, Jesus, brilliant! Yeah. You'd love it. Do not go to the zoo. Do not go to the zoo. What a Jesus Christ! I've got nothing against Dublin Zoo. Just I've got nothing against zoos in general. Like, but anyway. lot of walking for fuck all, really, isn't it?
Do you know what? I'm gonna tell you this. This is a true story, right? I saw my auntie yesterday, and I was with my little one, and she goes, "Oh, we're going to Potato Land," and she goes, "Well, you can't say that." I says, "No, it's a park," but she thinks it's called Tato Park. It's not Tato Land. It's Tato Park. And she goes, oh, God, I thought you guys were being racist. I'm like, no. It's actually called Tato. And I had to explain to her that's like their version of Walkers, and it's actually a character on the packet of crisps. It was just awkward. It really was awkward. But we got to the bottom of it, so yeah, it's all right.
I like the way you describe it as well.
Well, I had to be honest, and that's how it was, I guess. But yeah, yeah. But it's I'm excited. I went to Kilkenny last year for a friend's wedding, and beautiful, beautiful part. So oh,
yeah, it's nice down there as well. Yeah, no, it's all right down there. Again, wouldn't be my favourite.
Oh, you're not fussy.
just miserable.
No. Go to the west of Ireland, right? Go to Clare or Kerry. Or Galway, or Mayo, or Donegal. Oh my God, it's crazy. It's crazy beautiful. And just the activities you can do, mountain biking, surfing, you can go watch a bit of Gaelic games, hurling and football. Maybe if you want to watch a bit of soccer, I wouldn't recommend that, I'll be honest. But the scenery out there, the Ring and Kerry, do a bit of cycling as well. Oh man, it's crazy.
Mm.
This week's podcast has been sponsored by the Irish Tourist Board.
The Wild Atlantic Way.
Superb. Superb. Well, I don't think our listeners have actually turned off, which is good. Which is good. You know, they'll probably become your recommendations. They'll be tweeting me saying, go here, go there. So, yeah.
Are we still live? We're not still live, are we?
Well, we're not live. We're recording, but it's...
Are we?
Yeah. Yes. The pod finished there 45 minutes ago.
There you go.
Yeah. When I put every, this is the pod for insomnia. Have you got problems sleeping? Not anymore.
They don't mock it. It'll probably be on the news and noteworthy section of iTunes tomorrow.
I can guarantee you I'm getting an email from a football club or two anyway tomorrow, that's for sure.
Oh, blimey.
Because I'm badass.
It shows the listening. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
We'll take the silver lining off everything.
And on that note...
Excellent, boys.
Great stuff. Well, let's do Twitter handles before we call it a night. Ben?
At Ben Dinnery.
At Johnny _Wilson 55.
05.
Is it five? It's Johnny _Wilson 5.
What were you saying? Were you giving away your age just then, Johnny?
Don't start. Honestly, I can't. I shaved off my beard last week in a moment of madness, and my son started laughing at me. He goes, what'd you do that for? I goes, what do you mean, what did you do that for? He goes, you look stupid.
And he never said anything about your hair.
he looks at people and he goes, look at him, look what he's done. Like, because he doesn't really understand what a mullet is yet.
Oh, poor thing.
But the Pedouin, I'm already growing his mullet. The Pedouin is learning fast. He's got a Pedouin mullet.
Oh, wonderful. I can't wait till next week. Honestly, I can't wait. Right. For those of you who actually care, you can follow me on Twitter at Uncle Stell or even the channel at Shoot the Defence. So that's it from us this week. So if you have anything else to say, you can tweet us and get in touch. But if you don't, thank you for listening. Take care.